This is disc number 8.
Kara went silent. Nikki wondered if the woman had said all she had really wanted to say and would decide to stop there. But then she went on. The point is that Richard felt so much of me, of my inner thoughts and all. No one has ever... Kara went silent again, but this time in apparent frustration at trying to find the words to explain what she meant. I understand, Kara, Nikki assured her. I really do. I've healed people so I know the sensations you experienced, if not as deeply. I've never been able to succeed to the extent that Richard did with you, but I've experienced more or less the same kind of conditions when I heal people, especially when I healed Richard. That's good to hear, that you know what I'm talking about. Kara casually kicked a rock as she walked along. Well, I don't think Lord Rawl is aware of it, but when we were together like that, he didn't just experience my inner feelings and thoughts, so to speak. I experienced him as well. She growled to herself, I shouldn't be saying this. She waved a hand. Forget I said anything. Nikki wasn't sure what the woman was getting at. Kara, if you aren't comfortable telling me, then don't. You know how much I care for Richard, but still, if you don't think you shouldn't say anything, or that you are stepping out of bounds in your relationship with him, then perhaps you should trust that instinct. Kara sighed. Maybe you're right. Nikki couldn't ever recall Kara appearing so flustered. If there was one thing enduring about the woman, it was her resolute confidence. She was always decisive about precisely what she should do in any given circumstance. Nikki didn't always think that Kara was right, and she knew that Richard didn't either. But they could always count on Kara being determined to do the best thing for Richard, no matter how it might endanger Kara herself or anger them. If she felt her actions were necessary to protect him, she simply went ahead, dismissing the consequences to herself, including his disapproval. As they walked in silence through the dark alleyway, Nikki, with the help of her gift, could hear people in the distance speaking in low voices. She didn't try to pick out the words. She did no more than note the general nature of the conversation. It was men and women gathered at the stables, some speaking in turn. Nikki could distinguish Richard speaking gently to them, answering questions. She could hear people weeping. At the corner of the inn, where the road to the right led down a few doors to the stables, Kara abruptly caught Nikki's arm and brought her to a halt while they were still in the deep shadows. Look, you and I, well, we both started out in all this determined to kill Lord Rawl. Somewhat taken aback, Nikki didn't think that this was the time to split hairs. I guess you're right. Maybe more than anyone else, you and I have a unique perspective on Lord Rawl. I think that when you start out wanting to do someone harm, and they make you see how wrong you've been, and how your own life means more than that, well, it kind of makes you care all that much more for them. I think I would have to agree with you. Kara gestured back the way they had come, toward the grounds of the palace that was now Liberty Square. Back there, when the revolt started, when Lord Rawl was wounded and near death, people didn't want to let you try to heal him. They were afraid that you would instead do him harm. I'm the one who told them to trust you. I understood the awakening you had gone through, because I had gone through much the same thing. I was the only one who knew what you had come to feel about him. I told them to let you do it. They feared you might use the opportunity to take his life. I knew you wouldn't. I knew you would save him. You're right, Kara. We both care deeply for him. We both have a special bond with him. Yes, that's it. A special bond. Different, I think, than other people. Mystified by what Kara could be getting at, Nikki spread her hands. So you wish to tell me something? Kara looked down at her boots as she nodded. When Lord Rawl and I shared that togetherness, I felt some of his inner emotions. Inside him, he has a terrible, burning loneliness. I think that maybe all the business about this woman, this Kaylin, is because of his lonesomeness. Nikki took a deep breath and let it out slowly as she wondered at the precise nature of what Kara had sensed in him. I suppose that may be part of it. Kara cleared her throat. Nikki, when you hold a man in your arms like that and you have been, together in such a personal way, you come to truly feel what's inside him. Nikki pushed her feelings farther back into the shadows. I don't doubt that you're right, Kara. I mean, I just wanted to hold him forever, to comfort him, to keep him from feeling so alone. Nikki stole a sidelong glance at the moored Sith. She was twisting her mouth as she studiously watched the ground. Nikki didn't say anything, waiting instead for Kara to go on. But I just don't think I'm the one to do such a thing for Lord Rol. Nikki cautiously framed her question. You mean you don't think that you're the woman who can satisfy his loneliness? I guess not. Benjamin? The woman shrugged. That's part of it. She looked up and met Nikki's gaze. I love Lord Rol. I'd give my life for him. And I have to admit that lying there and having him in my arms made me feel like maybe I could be more than just his bodyguard and friend. As I lay there in that bed, holding him close to me, I imagined what it would be like to be his... Her voice trailed off. Nikki swallowed. I see. But I just don't think that I'm the one. I don't know why. I'm not exactly an expert in matters of the heart, but I don't feel like I'm the one he needs. I just don't think I could be. If he were to ask it of me, I would do it in a heartbeat, but not because I wanted it exactly. Do you understand what I mean? You mean you would do it out of your deep respect and caring for him, not out of your personal wish to be his lover? That's it, Kara said with a sigh of relief, apparently at having someone else say it aloud. Besides, I just don't think that Lord Rol feels that way about me. When I was sensing his feelings, when we were in each other's arms, I think I would have known if he felt that way about me, but he doesn't. He loves me, I know that much, but not in that way. Nikki carefully eased out her own breath. So, that's what you wanted me to know? That you think his loneliness is the source of his fantasy woman? Kara nodded. Yes. But one more thing, too. Nikki glanced down the street, watching men making their way to the stable. And what would that be? I think that maybe you could be the one. Nikki's heart came up in her throat as she turned to see Kara staring right at her. What? I think you could be the one for Lord Rol. She held up her hands to forestall any argument. Don't say anything. I don't want you to be saying that I'm crazy. Don't say anything for now. Just think about it. We'll be leaving shortly, and it will be a while until you can come to meet up with us, so you have time and you could think about it. I'm not asking you to sacrifice yourself for him or anything foolish like that. I'm just saying that I think Lord Rol needs someone, and you could be that woman. I mean, if you felt right about it. I'm not the one he needs. I'm Mord Sith, and Lord Rol is a wizard. Dear spirits, I hate magic, and he is magic. We just aren't right for each other in all kinds of little ways, but you have so much in common with him. You're a sorceress. Who could understand him better than you? Who could help him with every aspect of his life better than you? I remember back that night at camp in the shelter when the two of you were talking about the creative dimension of magic. I didn't understand half of it, but it struck me then how the two of you could talk so easily to each other and understand each other's thoughts, ideas, and meaning like no one else could. I remember being taken by how the two of you, seemed so right together. And I remember thinking, too, when we lay down close to him to keep him warm, how good you looked close to him like that, like a woman would be close to a man she cared about. I remember for some reason half expecting him to kiss you. It would have seemed natural. Nikki couldn't make her heart slow down. Kara, I... Words failed her. Kara picked at a strip of peeling paint on the corner board of the building. Besides, you're about the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Lord Rawl should have a wife who is his match, and I can't think of a better match than you. Wife? Don't you see how much sense it makes? It would fill the emptiness I felt inside him. It would bring him joy and happiness to replace his misery. He would have someone to share his gift and his connection to magic. He wouldn't be lonely. Just think about it. But Kara, Richard doesn't love me. Kara appraised her for a long, uncomfortable moment. Nikki recalled then Richard once telling her how paralyzing it felt to be under the scrutiny of a moored Sith when she looked into your eyes, really looked into them. Nikki now understood what he meant. Maybe he doesn't feel that way now, but maybe when you come back to join us you could do a little more to let him know you were open to such a notion about the two of you. I mean, if you wanted to, if you were open to the idea. Sometimes people just have to be made aware of something so that they will consider it seriously. That's why I felt I needed to say something to you. Maybe if he thought you might be open to such a thing, then he'd get interested and start looking at you in that light. You know, people who are in love had to fall in love at some point. They weren't born in love with their mate. Maybe you just have to help him get to that point where he will start to think about you in that light. It could even be he thinks that a beautiful, intelligent woman like you could never care for him seriously. Sometimes men are shy that way about a woman they think is extraordinarily beautiful. Kara, I just don't think he... Kara leaned in confidentially. It could even be that he thinks you would never be interested in him, and so he dreamed up this other woman to fill the void. Nikki wet her lips. I think we had better get over to the stables or he may leave without you. He seems pretty set on leaving. Kara offered a smile. You're right. Look, Nikki, if you'd rather, you could just forget I said anything. I can see that I'm making you uncomfortable. I don't exactly feel right about saying anything anyway. Then why did you? Kara gazed off wistfully. I guess because as I was holding him and I felt the depth of his loneliness, it just broke my heart. Her gaze drifted back to Nikki's, and Mord Sith don't get broken hearts all that often. Nikki almost said that neither did sorceresses. Chapter 22. Lanterns hanging from stout posts lent a cozy glow to the stable. The dusty smell of fresh straw hung thick in the wide passageway running in front of the stalls and pens. Men and women, some with their children along, had filled the walkway and in a few places spilled over into the empty pens. But now, after Richard had talked to the relatives of the men who had been killed, many had bid him a safe journey and started for their homes. Dawn was still a couple of hours off. Despite the hour, there had been a number of people other than grieving relatives who had come to ask questions about the impending battle for their city. More people, sitting on hay bales, had watched from the loft, but now many had started down the ladders. Richard supposed that they would be going back to bed to catch a little more sleep. He knew that their sleep would be troubled by worries about the soldiers marching toward their city. Victor, standing nearby, looked grim after speaking about the bravery of his men and how much he would miss each of them. Many people wept openly as they listened. Richard had known that nothing he could have said would have lifted their grief. He had done his best to make them understand what good men he thought they had been and how much he cared for them. In the end, all he could really do was sympathize with their loss. He had felt helpless and useless, even though they had seemed to appreciate the things he'd said. From the corner of his eye, Richard caught sight of Nikki and Kara as they came in the big doorway at the end of the stable. They had to ease their way among people who were leaving. He had been wondering where the two of them had gone to, but, surrounded by people all wanting to speak with him, he hadn't had a chance to go check. He'd figured that either they had wanted to let him have the time to talk to the people, or else Kara had wanted to look around outside to make sure that all was well. Either way, he was glad to see their faces.
So that's what you think, then, that this thing, this beast that crashed through the walls of Ishak's inn was after you?
An older man named Hendon asked as he paused beside Richard. He held a pipe with a long, curved stem in one hand. his elbow propped on a rail as he spoke. The skin on his thin, leathery face sagged with the weight of years. Because he was older and possessed a quiet, prudent manner, many in the crowd had deferred to his earlier questioning of Richard. Hendon drew air in through his pipe and released aromatic clouds of smoke from the opposite side of his mouth as he waited for Richard's answer. "Like I said, the evidence seems to point to it, so I think it probably was. But whatever it was, it's likely that it was coming after me, so you can see why I think it's best if I leave now and not risk that thing coming after me again in the city, and maybe causing harm to a lot of people here." The man removed the pipe from his mouth and gestured toward Richard with the stem.
"You mean like those men with Victor were harmed as a result of you being near?"
Victor stepped forward.
"Now look here, Hendon. It's not Lord Rawl's fault that evil people are trying to kill him. Those same evil people want to come here and kill us as well, beast or no beast. Would you be to blame if Jagang's soldiers coming to kill you happened to harm Lord Rawl on their way to get you? My men were fighting against the Imperial Order when they were cut down by something evil. That evil was spawned by the Order. They were fighting for a world for themselves and their families in which they could live their lives free and safe. They made the choice to do that, rather than live in subjugation."
Hendon chewed on the pipe stem a moment, as his placid eyes considered Victor.
"Just asking. Only think it's reasonable to know what the situation is and what we're up against."
Richard saw heads among the men and women nodding. "You're right. It is reasonable," he told the man before Victor could get any hotter. "I don't begrudge a man asking questions, especially where lives are concerned. But Victor is right as well. Jagang is intent on killing us all. And, as I've told you, the order needs to be stopped or none of us, no matter where we are, will ever be able to rest easy." Richard saw Nikki slipping effortlessly through the press of people departing. Her flowing blonde hair cascaded over the shoulders of a black dress. The dress, cut low with a laced bodice, showed off her shapely form to advantage. But it was her commanding presence that made her stand out like a queen in the throng. Kara, in her red leather, could have been the royal escort. Richard felt a little uncomfortable at the way they both stared at him as if they hadn't seen him for a month. Hendon unexpectedly clapped Richard on the back of his shoulder, bringing him out of his thoughts. The man spoke with the pipe clenched in his teeth.
"Safe journey, Lord Rawl. Thank you for everything you've done for us. We look forward to your return to the free city of Alterang."
"Thanks," Richard said with a smile to the man. Hendon moved in with the flow of the others who were engaged in conversation as they made their way along the aisle and out the door. Richard had been relieved to see that these people understood what their freedom meant and meant to keep it. Ishak, standing near Richard, waved his red hat at Nikki and Kara when he spotted them.
"There you are," he called out. "Are you all right, Mistress Kara? Richard told me you were safe, but I'm thankful to see it so with my own eyes."
Richard followed Ishak as he rushed to meet the two women, beaming his pleasure at seeing them both.
"We're fine," Kara said. "I'm sorry about the damage to your inn."
Ishak waved a hand, as if the matter were trivial.
"It is nothing, boards and plaster, nothing at all. People can't so easily be fixed."
"You're right about that," Kara said, as she met Richard's gaze.
Richard saw Jamila, standing on the other side of the passageway, scowl at Ishak's dismissal of the importance of the damage to the inn, but she didn't say anything. She held the hand of a little girl as she leaned back against the wall near the big door, watching. By the girl's round face, Richard thought that it had to be Jamila's daughter. The girl beamed an infectious smile at him, and he couldn't help smiling back.
"Ishak, I said that you should deduct the damage from what you owe me, and I meant it."
Ishak replaced his hat.
"Why you worry so? I told you I fix."
Before Richard could answer, he heard a commotion just outside. Some of the men who had been patrolling the neighborhood came in the door dragging two big men with them. The two men, one with tangled, grimy strands of dark hair, and the second with his hair cropped short. Both were dressed in brown tunics similar to those worn by many of the people of the city.
Victor leaned closer to Richard and spoke under his breath.
Spies.
Richard didn't doubt it. He could see broad belts underneath the tunics that would probably have held weapons. With the Imperial Order soldiers getting close, they would have sent scouts ahead to gauge what they were going to be up against. Now that they were captives, it was possible that they might be prevailed upon to provide valuable information on the nature of the impending attack. Despite their attempt to dress the part, the two looked out of place among the people of the city. The plain clothes they wore weren't quite large enough to fit their bulk. Neither was huge, nor were they massively muscular, but they had a well-honed, cool, resourceful demeanor. Both men kept silent, but their eyes were always on the move, surveying everything around them. They looked as dangerous as wolves among sheep. As the guards pulled the two men into the passageway inside the stable, Richard instinctively lifted his sword a few inches, making sure that it was clear in its scabbard before letting it drop back. As one of the guards turned to look at something, the prisoner with the long hair suddenly and savagely kicked the shin of the man holding him from behind. The guard cried out in pain and shock as he crumpled to the ground. The man violently broke the grip of the men holding his arms by twisting and flinging them away. Some of the nearby people were toppled to the ground. Guards pounced on the free man. In the scramble, several crashed to the ground bloodied, and another tumbled back over a rail. In an instant, the subdued mood in the stable changed as the entire place erupted in panic. Women screamed. Children, when their mothers screamed, shrieked. Older children started wailing. Men yelled. The guards cried out orders. Confusion and fear swept through the crowd. The free enemy spy, a powerful man who knew how to handle adversaries and how to create a break for himself in a relatively confined space where they couldn't employ the numbers necessary to apply overwhelming force, sprang up with a roar. He had Jamila's little girl by the hair. Somehow in the scramble, the man had managed to snatch a knife from someone and now had it pressed to the girl's throat. The child squealed in terror. Jamila dove for the girl, only to be sidekicked in the head. The powerful blow knocked her aside. Another guard on the ground at the other side also received a wicked kick to his head as he tried to use the opportunity to get close. Richard was already methodically advancing, his attention focused on the threat.
"Everyone back!"
the man growled at all the people close in all around him. He tossed his head to flip his greasy hair back off his face. His eyes darted around at the people trying to back up out of the way. He still panted from the effort of the brief struggle. Sweat ran down his pockmarked face.
"Everyone back or I'll slit her throat."
The girl, a meaty fist holding her aloft by the hair, again shrieked in terror. He held her fast against his stomach. Her feet kicked in the air as she struggled in vain to escape.
"Let him go,"
the man ordered the guards holding his partner.
"Now, or she dies."
Richard was already lost in a rage unleashed. There would be no compromise, no negotiations, no quarter given. He stood sideways in a slight crouch, his right side to the man holding the girl, preventing him from seeing his sword. The man kept glancing at the guards to his left who were holding the other man. He wasn't paying any particular attention to Richard. The burly man holding the wailing girl didn't know it, but in Richard's mind, the deed had already been completed. In Richard's mind, the man was already dead. The fury of the magic from Richard's sword had been freed before his hand even found the hilt. When it did, the storm thundered, unrestrained up through him, powering his muscles, joining his overwhelming lust to consummate the deadly thought. In an instant, calm had been swept away by a terrible avalanche of need for action. In that instant, there was nothing Richard wanted more than the man's blood. Nothing less would stop him. Conviction burned away all uncertainty. The sword of truth was a tool of the seeker's intent, and that intent was now simple and clear. Now that Richard's hand was on the hilt of his sword, nothing else existed but his purpose, and his singular purpose was to bring death raining down on the man before him. His vision tunneled toward his target. His entire life narrowed down to that singular, lethal commitment. The man with a knife had only to pull it across the tender veil of flesh, and the girl would die. But that would take time, brief time to be sure, but time nonetheless, because he would first have to decide to do it. At that moment, the man's life was tied to the life of the girl. If she died, his shield would lose its value. He would have to weigh that choice and decide on killing her before he resolved to it. That decision would take a fleeting glimmer of time. Richard had already made his decision and had fully charged himself to the task. He now had a sliver of time that gave him an opportunity to alter the nature of the situation, to be the one to control the outcome. He would not let that small slip of time escape him. But even that no longer mattered to him. Now, powered by lethal rage, both the swords and his own, he wanted the man's blood. Nothing else would satisfy him. Nothing else would stop him. He would accept nothing less. Richard twisted away from the threat, putting the back of his shoulders to the man with the girl, feigning that he was turning away, that he was backing off as the man had commanded. In so doing, Richard knew that with so many things pulling for his attention, the man would discount Richard and direct his concern to the more obvious threat of the men to his sides and back. With his fist tightly gripping the wire-wound hilt of his sword, Richard pulled a breath. The world around him seemed to go silent and still. As he reached the apex of his backward twist, he paused. Richard felt his heart begin a beat. With all his power, as people stood frozen, as the man with the knife stood at the brink of murder, as the girl's shrill scream drew out into a wire-thin sound filling the empty void in time, Richard unleashed himself in an explosive movement. With all his strength, he uncoiled. His blade erupted from its sheath, fully charged not only with a wrath of its own, but with Richard's deadly resolve. At the same time as the Sword of Truth rang with the unique sound of its liberation, Richard released a cry of fury. As he spun, he emptied all his rage into that roar. With every ounce of effort he had, he drove the blade around with as much speed and power as he could put behind it. In a crystal clear instant in time, Richard's vision focused on the man with the knife standing rigid with surprise. Into that void in time, Richard poured all his effort, all his muscle, all his wrath, all his need. That instant belonged to him alone, and he used it to his singular purpose. He could see the drops of sweat leave the man's face as his head snapped toward Richard. Yellow-orange light from the lanterns reflected in tiny points on those drops as they floated weightless in midair. Richard could count each point of light from each lantern in each individual droplet of sweat as his sword ever so slowly swept around. He could count each greasy strand of the man's hair as it whipped around, floating up into the air with the droplets. Richard knew that eyes all around the stable were watching, that the eyes of the girl, too, were watching, but that made no difference. The only eyes that mattered to him were the dark eyes that at last met his glare. In those black eyes, Richard could see the initiation of thought. The tip of Richard's sword whistled through the dusty air. Lantern light glinted off the razor-sharp steel. He could see the blade mirrored in the man's dark eyes. Those eyes reflected the recognition of the full dimension of the threat. Onward came the sword, sweeping like the crack of a whip toward those eyes, sweeping around toward the target Richard held in his own sight. In that instant, the man completed his thought and made the decision to act. But even in the infinitesimal fragment of time that it took to come to the conclusion of that thought, the lightning arc of the blade closed most of the distance. Even as the man's decision was being made, flinching fear from Richard's battle cry caused the man to tense. For that instant in time, the muscles of the man's arms paused as fear fought intent. It became a race to see which blade would first bite flesh. Losing that race would be irrevocable. With his gaze riveted on the man's eyes, Richard at last saw his sword flying at frightening speed, entering his line of sight. Seeing that blade again filled him with exhilaration. Driven by thundering rage, the blade caught the side of the man's head level with his dark eyes, exactly where Richard intended it. In that instant, the crystal-clear moment in time that had been stretched to the breaking point shattered in sound and fury. The world went red in Richard's vision as the man's head came apart around the blade crashing through his skull. The hammer-hard sound of it thundered through the stables. Bone fragmented, Crimson droplets sprayed up and away. The entire top of the skull lifted as the blade crashed through living tissue. In a long trail across the wall, bone, tissue, and blood traced the route of the sword's sweep. In that instant of shattering violence, the man's life was gone. Richard's remorseless rage shielded him from feeling the pain of any pity. The force of the sword's impact caused the arm with the knife to fall away from the girl even before the swing of Richard's sword was complete. The man's body, like nothing more than boneless meat, began collapsing. The man had decided to kill the girl, but after he had made that choice, he had not had enough time to make his blade do his bidding. Richard had. He felt his heart finish the beat it had begun when he had leaped into the narrow window of time. The man's body gathered speed as it descended until it hit the ground heavily, lifting a small cloud of dust. The top portion of his head, most of his scalp still attached, landed with a heavy thud just outside the open stable doors, bouncing and tumbling away into the night, leaving a trail of gore to trace its crooked route. Richard heard the people gasp in shock. Others screamed. The little girl, shrieking in terror, scrambled away into her mother's outstretched arms. As he held the blade cocked, ready for any other threat, Richard met the gaze of the wide eyes of the second man, still standing in place, held fast by Victor's guards. The man made no attempt to escape or to fight. Victor charged in through a gap in the bystanders, his heavy mace raised and ready. From somewhere, Kara had appeared behind Richard, her ajeel in her fist. Richard spotted Nikki for the first time. She raced across the passageway, her arms held up.
"No!"
she screamed.
"Stop!"
Victor straightened in surprise. Nikki seized his raised wrist as if she believed he was about to slaughter the other prisoner.
"Stand down, blacksmith!"
Startled, Victor paused and let his arm drop. Nikki turned a furious glare on Richard.
"You too, carpenter! You will do as I say and stand down. Do you hear me?"
she screamed in fury. Richard blinked.
"Carpenter?"
Chapter 23. Through the haze of the sword's anger storming through him, Richard realized that Nikki had to be up to something. He didn't know her intent, but by calling both Victor and him by a trade rather than by their real names, she was sending them a signal that was too obvious to miss. She was making an emphatic bid for them to catch on to her effort and to follow her lead. Probably because people often did call him blacksmith, Victor didn't seem to get the hint. He started to open his mouth to say something. Nikki smacked him across the face.
"Silence! I will hear none of your excuses."
Shocked, Victor took a step back. The shock quickly curdled into a dark scowl, but he didn't say anything. Seeing that Victor got the message to keep quiet, Nikki turned her ire on Richard. She shook her finger at him.
"You will have to answer for this, carpenter."
Richard didn't have any idea what she was up to, but when their eyes met, he gave her a slight nod. He feared to do anything else, lest he spoil whatever it was she was doing. Nikki appeared to be worked up into a fit.
"What's the matter with you?" she yelled at him. "Where would you ever get the unacceptable idea that you can act of your own accord in such a manner?"
Richard didn't know what she wanted him to say, so he offered only a humble shrug, as if he were too ashamed to speak up for himself.
"He was saving my child," cried Jamila. "That man was going to cut her throat."
Nikki wheeled indignantly to the woman.
"How dare you show such little regard for our fellow man? How dare you judge what is in another man's heart? That is the Creator's exclusive right, not yours. Are you a witch woman who can see the future? If not, then you can't say what he would have done. Do you think he should be murdered for what you think he might do? Even if he would have acted, none of us alone has the authority to judge the right or wrong of whatever he did."
Nikki turned again to Richard.
"What would you expect the poor man to do? The two of them are dragged in here by a mob without any charges, trial, or even being allowed to explain themselves. You treat a man like an animal, and then are surprised when he acts out of confusion and fear?
How do you expect Jagang the Just to ever decide to give our people another chance to do what is right and proper when we act like this? The man had a right to fear for his life when among such a mindless rabble as he saw all around him. As the mayor's wife, I will not allow such behavior. Do you hear me? The mayor will not like to hear how shamefully some of our fellow citizens have acted tonight. In the mayor's absence, I will see that our ways are upheld. Now put away your sword. Beginning to understand what she was doing, Richard made no attempt to answer, and instead sheathed his sword as instructed. As he took his hand from the hilt, the weapon's rage extinguished. Richard's knees nearly buckled. No matter the justification, the need, the number of times he righteously used the sword, killing remained a hideous deed. Not wanting to spoil Nikki's act, Richard duly hung his head. She turned a fierce look on the crowd. They all took a step back. We are a peaceful people. Have you all forgotten our duty to our fellow man, to the Creator's ways? How can we ever expect the Emperor to someday accept us back into the fold of the Imperial Order if we behave like subhuman animals? The crowd stood mute. Richard certainly hoped that they, too, grasped that Nikki had a purpose, and they should not spoil what she was trying to accomplish. As the mayor's wife, I will not allow senseless violence to poison our people and our future. A younger woman in the crowd put her hands on her hips and took a step forward. But we must at all times keep in mind our duty to our fellow man, Nikki said in a threatening tone, cutting her off. Not our selfish desires. With a surreptitious glance to Victor, he understood her meaning and pulled the woman back to make sure she kept her mouth shut. Nikki glanced around at the guards. It is our responsibility to guide our fellow man, not to butcher him. One man has been murdered this night. The people's authorities will have to hear this case and decide what will become of this carpenter. Some of you will have to see to it that he is confined until then. In the meantime, as the mayor's wife, I will not allow this other man to meet a similar unjust fate. I know my husband would want to set matters right, but I also know that he would not want it to have to wait until tomorrow just for him to say as much. He would want it rectified immediately. So you will take this other citizen outside of the city and release him. Let him go on his way in peace. We will cause him no harm. The carpenter, as I said, will have to be held until he can be brought before the proper authorities to answer for his heinous deed. Victor bowed.
Very wise, madam. I'm sure your husband, the mayor, would be pleased that you intervened on his behalf.
Nikki glared at the top of his head for a moment while he was bowed before her. Then she turned to stand before the second captive spy. She bowed to him. Richard noticed that somewhere along the line the cord of Nikki's bodice had come unlaced. It wasn't lost on the man, either. Her deep bow provided him a good long look at her cleavage. Once she straightened, it was a moment before he finally looked up into her eyes. I hope that you will accept our apology for your inhumane treatment. It is not the way we were taught to respect all people as our brothers and equals. The man made a face, as if to say he might be able to forgive his mistreatment.
I can understand why you people are so touchy. What with your insurrection against the Imperial Order and all.
Insurrection? Nikki waved a hand dismissively. Nonsense. It was little more than a misunderstanding. Some of the workers, she gestured toward Richard without looking, like these ignorant, selfish men here, wanted more say for themselves and higher wages. It was nothing more than that. As my husband has often told me, it was misconstrued and blown all out of proportion. Selfish men caused an unfortunate panic that got out of control. It was much like this terrible tragedy here tonight, a misunderstanding resulting in needless harm to one of the Creator's innocent children. The man regarded her with a long, unreadable look before he spoke.
And all of Alterang feels this way?
Nikki sighed. Well, along with the vast majority of the people of Alterang, my husband, the mayor, certainly does. He's been working to bring to task the hotheads and troublemakers. Along with representatives of the people, he has worked to make these few reactionary types see what a mistake they made and what great harm they do us all. They acted without considering the greater good. My husband has brought the leaders of the trouble before the People's Council, and they have decreed the proper punishment. Most have repented. At the same time, he works to reform and re-educate the less intelligent of the lot. The man tipped his head to her in a slight bow.
Please tell your husband that he is a wise man and has a wise wife who knows that her place is properly in service to the greater good.
Nikki nodded in return.
Yes, exactly, the greater good. My husband has often said that, despite our own personal wishes or feelings, we must always consider the greater good above all else, that despite any personal sacrifice, we must think only of the betterment of all people and not cling to the sinful ways of individual wishes and greed. No one has a right to place themselves above the well-being of others.
Nikki's words seemed to have struck a chord with the man. Such notions were the fundamental teachings and beliefs of the Imperial Order. She knew precisely how to strum those chords.
How true, he said, as he watched her, taking another long look down the gaping neckline of her dress. I guess I'd better be on my way.
And where are you headed? Nikki asked.
Her hand came up to modestly contain the sagging front of her dress. He looked back up to her face.
Oh, we were just traveling through, heading farther to the south to where we have family. We were hoping to take up some work there. I didn't know this fellow all that well. We've simply been traveling together for the last few days.
Well, Nikki said, considering what happened here tonight, I'm sure that my husband would suggest that for your own safety you continue with your journey, and considering the few reactionary types still about, it would be best if you were to do so at once. There has already been one tragedy tonight. We would not like to chance another.
The man passed a murderous glare across the assembled crowd. His gaze settled on Richard, but Richard kept his eyes turned to the ground.
Yes, of course, madam. Please thank the mayor for trying to bring the filthy troublemakers back to the ways of the Creator.
Nikki flicked her hand toward a few of the guards.
You men, show this citizen safely out of the city. Take enough men to ensure that there will be no trouble, and I need not remind you of how displeased the mayor and the people's council would be if they discovered that any harm whatsoever came to this man. He will be allowed to go on his way.
The men bowed and mumbled that they would see to it. By the way they acted, Richard could tell that they knew how to fall back into the role of what life had been like under the Imperial Order. All the people in the stable watched in silence as the men disappeared into the night with their charge. Long after they were gone, everyone stood still in tense silence, watching the empty doorway, fearful to speak until the man was far enough away, lest he hear anything.
Well, Nikki said at last with a sigh, I hope that he makes it back to his fellow soldiers. If he does, then we have gone a long way toward spreading a little confusion before the battle.
Oh, he will, Victor said. He will be eager to report such news as you have given him tonight. Hopefully they will be so confident that we can give them a real surprise.
Let's hope so, Nikki said.
Some of the people still remaining in the stable broke into chatter, pleased with Nikki's apparent stratagem of confusing the enemy. Some bid a good night and went on their way. Some stood around the corpse, staring. Nikki offered Victor a brief smile.
Sorry to have to strike you.
Victor shrugged.
Well, it was to a good purpose.
When Nikki turned to Richard, she looked uneasy, as if she feared a lecture or a reprimand.
I want the troops coming this way to think they will have no trouble crushing us, she explained. Overconfidence leads to mistakes.
There was more to it, Richard said.
Nikki cast a quick glance at the people still in the stables and then eased closer to him so that others couldn't hear.
You said that I could come and join up with you once the troops coming to crush the people of Altarang are destroyed.
And?
Her blue eyes turned as hard as iron.
And I intend to see to it.
Richard considered her for a time,
finally deciding to let her do what she could to help the people of Alterang and not interfere with how she planned to accomplish it. Besides, he was more than a little worried about what her plan might be. Right then, he didn't really want to know what she was up to. He already had enough to worry about. Richard took the loose ends of the cords lacing her bodice, drew them tight, and retied them. She stood with her hands at her side, watching his eyes the whole time he did it.
"Thank you," she said when he finished.
"I guess that must have come undone in all the excitement." Richard ignored her lie and checked to the side to see Jamila there, behind some of the other people. The woman, her cheeks swollen and red, was kneeling, hugging the frightened little girl. Richard stepped closer.
"How is she?"
Jamila looked up at him.
"Safe. Thank you, Lord Rawl. You saved her precious life. Thank you."
As the little girl sobbed and clutched her mother, she eyed Richard with a look of terror, as if she feared he might slay her next. She had witnessed something terrible at Richard's hand.
"I'm relieved that she's safe and unharmed," he said to Jamila.
Richard smiled at the girl, but received only a hateful glare in return. Nikki clasped his arm in empathy, but said nothing. The people still left in the stable finally spoke up to congratulate him on saving the child. They all seemed to have guessed that Nikki's words to the man were a ruse of some sort. Many spoke up then to tell her that they thought her deception was clever.
"That should throw them off," one of the men said.
Richard knew that she had more planned than to simply throw them off. He was concerned about what she intended to do. He watched briefly as some of the men dragged away the dead spy. At Ishak's direction, others began quickly cleaning up the gore. The smell of blood made horses nervous, and the sooner they were rid of it, the better. The rest of the people bid Richard a safe journey and then departed for their homes. It wasn't long before they had all gone. The men cleaning up the remains finished and left. Only Nikki, Kara, Ishak, and Victor remained behind. The stables became a quiet and empty place. Chapter 24. Richard carefully surveyed the shadows before going to see to the horses that Ishak had collected for him. The stables felt too quiet. He remembered the hush in the room in the inn before the thing came crashing through the wall. It was hard not to find the sudden quiet menacing. He wished he had a way to know if the beast was near or if it was about to pounce. He wished he knew how to fight such a thing. His fingers touched the pommel of his sword. If nothing else, at least he had his sword and its attendant power. He remembered all too well the inhuman promises of suffering and torment left lurking within Kara for him to find. It made him nauseated and lightheaded just recalling the wordless whisper of those covenants. He had to pause and put a hand on the rail to steady himself for a moment. As he glanced over to see Kara, he still felt the wordless joy of her being alive and well. It lifted his heart just to see her looking back at him. He felt a profound connection to her as a result of the experience of healing her. He felt as if he knew the woman beneath the armor of Mord Sith a little better. Now he needed to help Kaelin to see her alive and well. Two of the horses were already saddled and waiting, with the supplies loaded on the others. Ishak had always been as good as his word. Richard ran his hand along the flanks of the bigger bay mare as he entered her stall, feeling her muscles and letting her know he was behind her so she wouldn't be spooked. One ear swiveled toward him. With all that had happened, to say nothing of the scent of blood in the air, the horses were all jumpy. The mare tossed her head and stomped nervously at having a stranger near. Before he went about hooking his bow to the saddle, he first stroked the mare's neck and spoke softly to her. He reached up and gently caressed her ear. He was pleased that she settled down after a little assurance. When he stepped back out from the stall, Nikki was watching him, waiting for him. She looked lost and lonely.
"You will be careful?"
she asked. "Don't worry," Kara said as she walked past, carrying some of her things. On her way into the stall, holding the smaller of the two saddled mares, she said, "I will be giving him a very long lecture on the foolishness of his unthinking actions tonight."
"What unthinking actions?" Victor asked.
Carl laid an arm over the shoulder of her horse, idly running her fingers through its mane as she turned back to the blacksmith. "We have a saying in Dahara, we are the steel against steel, so that the Lord Rawl can be the magic against magic. What it means is that it's foolish for the Lord Rawl to needlessly risk his life in things like battles with blades. We can do that. But we cannot battle the magic. He alone is the one who must do that. To do so, he must be alive. Our job is keeping the Lord Rawl safe from weapons of steel so that he can protect us against magic. That is the Lord Rawl's duty. That is his part of the bond." Victor gestured toward Richard's sword.
"I'd say he seems to do all right with a blade."
Kara arched an eyebrow. "Sometimes he is lucky. Need I remind you that he almost died from getting himself shot with a simple arrow? Without a moored Sith, he would be helpless," she added for good measure. Richard silently rolled his eyes when Victor cast a worried look his way. Ishak, too, seemed concerned as he peered at Richard, as if he were a stranger he was seeing for the first time. Both men had known him for nearly a year, as simply Richard, a man who loaded wagons for Ishak's transport company and hauling iron to Victor's blacksmith shop. They had thought that he was married to Nikki. They didn't know that he had really been Nikki's captive at the time. Discovering that he was in fact the Lord Rawl, the nearly mythical freedom fighter from far to the north, was still somewhat disorienting for both men. They tended to view him as one of their own who had risen up to fight tyranny with them. That was how they knew him. Whenever the Lord Rawl issue came up, they got nervous, as if they suddenly didn't know how they should behave around him. As Kara went about loading the rest of her things into the saddlebags, Nikki laid a hand on Ishak's shoulder. "If you don't mind, I need to see Richard alone for a moment before he leaves." Ishak nodded.
"Victor and I will be outside. We have matters to discuss."
As the two men made for the door, Nikki cast Kara a brief glance. Kara gave her horse a quick pat on the side and then followed the two men out of the stable, pulling the big door closed behind herself. Richard was amazed, and just a little concerned, to see Kara leave without an argument. Nikki stood before him in the soft lamplight, twining her fingers together and looking rather uneasy, he thought.
"Richard, I'm worried about you. I should be with you."
"You've started something tonight that I think you will have to be the one to finish." She sighed.
"You're right about that."
Richard wondered just what it was she had started, what it was she had in mind. But he was in a hurry to leave. While he was concerned for Nikki's safety, he was vastly more worried about Kaelin. He wanted to get going.
"But I still..."
"When you're done helping these people end the immediate threat from the soldiers who are on their way here, you can catch up with me," Richard told her. "With this wizard, Kronos, leading them, the people here are certainly going to need your help."
"I know."
She was nodding, having already been over all of this ground before.
"Believe me, I intend to eliminate the threat descending upon Alterang. I don't intend to allow it to waste a lot of my time, and then I can leave to catch up with you."
A wave of cold dread washed through him as he suddenly grasped the core of her plan. He wanted to tell her to forget what she was thinking, but he made himself keep silent. He had important and perilous work of his own that he needed to get to. He wouldn't want her telling him that he couldn't do what he had planned. Besides, she was a sorceress who knew very well what she was doing. She had been a sister of the dark, one of six such women who had managed to become his teachers at the Palace of the Prophets. When one of them had tried to kill him to steal his gift, Richard had killed her instead. That had been the beginning of the battle that had brought down the palace. Jagang eventually captured the rest, including Sister Eulicia, their leader. In order to save Kaelin's life, Richard had once allowed five of them to swear a bond to him so that they could escape the Dreamwalker's hold on them. Nikki hadn't been with them at the time. Another later died in the Slif, leaving only those four sisters of the dark besides Nikki, not in Jagang's clutches. Nikki was certainly a formidable threat to any who opposed her. He just hoped she wasn't taking a foolish chance just to be able to more quickly get back to protect him. Richard hooked his thumbs behind his belt, not quite knowing what it was she wanted. "You will be welcome to join me, whenever you can manage it. I told you that.
I know.
A piece of advice. He waited until her gaze turned up to his. No matter how powerful you think you are, something as simple as an arrow can still kill you. A brief smile visited her face.
That advice goes both ways, wizard.
A thought occurred to him. How will you find me? She reached up and gripped his shirt at the collar as she leaned against him.
That's why I wanted to be alone with you. I will need to touch you with magic so that I can find you.
Richard's suspicion flared. What kind of magic?
I guess you could say that it's a little like your bond to the Daharan people which allows them to find you. Now is not the time to go into an explanation of it.
Richard began to worry about why she would need to be alone with him to do such a thing. Still gripping his shirt, she pressed against him, her eyes sliding half-closed.
Just stay still, she whispered.
She looked rather hesitant and reluctant about whatever it was she had planned. She looked and sounded as if she were slipping into a trance. Richard could have sworn that the lamps had been brighter before. Now the stable was dimly lit in a mellow orange glow. The hay smelled sweeter. The air felt warmer. Richard thought that perhaps he shouldn't be allowing her to do whatever it was that she intended to do. In the end, though, he decided that he trusted her. Nikki's left hand released its grip on his shirt and slipped up and over his shoulder to the back of his neck. Her fingers glided around his neck, her hand fisted, holding his hair at the back of his head to keep him still. Richard's level of alarm rose. He suddenly wasn't so sure that he wanted her to touch him with her power. He'd felt her magic several times before, and it wasn't something he was exactly eager to experience again. He wanted to back away, but somehow he didn't. Nikki leaned in even more and gently kissed his cheek. It was more than a kiss. The world around him dissolved. The stables, the humid air, the sweet aroma of hay all seemed to cease to exist. The only thing that existed was his connection to Nikki, as if she were all that held him from evaporating as well. He was swept into a raging realm of breathless pleasure with all of life itself. It was an overpowering, disorienting, magnificent sensation. Everything from the feel of the connection to her, the warmth and life of her, to all the beauty of the world, felt as if it flooded through him, filling him until it saturated his mind, making him dizzy with the staggering exhilaration of it. Every kind of pleasure he had ever known swept through him with overwhelming force, amplified beyond anything he had ever experienced, engulfing him in bliss so intense that the satisfaction of it brought a gasp and tears. When Nikki broke the kiss on his cheek, the world inside the stable swirled back in around him, and yet it seemed more intense than it had before, the sights and smells more vibrant than he remembered. It was quiet but for the hiss of a nearby lamp and the soft neigh of one of the horses. Richard's hands trembled with the lingering sensation of her kiss. He didn't know if what Nikki had done had lasted for a second or an hour. It was magic completely unlike any Richard had ever felt before. It left him so breathless that he had to remind himself to breathe again. He blinked at her.
What did you do?
The slightest smile blossomed in the curve of her lips and in her blindly blue eyes.
I touched you with a small trace of my magic so that I can find you. I recognize my power. I will be able to follow it to you. Fear not, the effect will last long enough for me to be able to find you.
I think you did more, Nikki.
Her smile ghosted away. Her brow tightened with her concern. It took her a moment to find the words. At last she peered at him with an intensity that told him that it was important to her that he understand.
Always before, Richard, I have hurt you with magic. When I took you away, when I held you prisoner, even when I healed you. It was always hurtful or painful. Forgive me, but I wanted just once to give you a touch of magic that would not leave you being hurt by me, or hating me.
Her gaze sank away from his.
I wanted you to have a better memory of me than of those times before when I touched you with the pain of magic. I wanted just once to give you a small trace of something pleasant instead.
He could not begin to imagine what any more than a small trace would have been like. He lifted her chin, making her look up into his eyes. "I don't hate you, Nikki. You know that. And I know that the times when you healed me, you were giving me my life. That was what counted." Finally, he was the one who had to look away from her blue eyes. It occurred to him that Nikki was probably the most beautiful woman he had ever met, other than Kaylin. "Thank you, though," he managed, still feeling the lingering effects of the sensation. She gently clutched his arm. "You did a good thing tonight, Richard. I thought some pleasant magic would give you back some of your strength." "I've seen a lot of people suffer and die. I couldn't stand the thought of the little girl dying, too."
"I meant in saving Kara's life."
"Oh. Well, I couldn't stand the thought of the big girl dying, either." Nikki smiled at that. He gestured to the horses. "I need to get going." She nodded, and he moved off to collect the horses and check their gear. Nikki went to open the stable door. After she did, Kara came back in to get her horse. Dawn was still a couple of hours off. Richard realized that he was terribly tired, especially after the emotional strain of having used his sword, but he did feel better after what Nikki had just done. He knew, though, that they wouldn't be getting much sleep for quite a while. They had a very long way to travel, and he fully intended to do it as swiftly as possible. By taking fresh horses with them, they would be able to ride hard, change mounts, and then continue to ride just as hard in order to make good time. He intended to ride more than hard. Nikki held his horse's bit as he stuffed his boot into the stirrup and swung up into the saddle. The horse flicked her tail and danced about, eager to be out of the stable, even if it was still night. Richard patted her shoulder to settle her down. She would have plenty of time to show him her spirit. Kara, once in her saddle, turned to frown at him. "By the way, Lord Rawl, where is it we're traveling to in such a hurry?" "I need to go see Shota." "Shota?" Kara's jaw dropped. "We're going to see the witch woman? Are you out of your mind?" Nikki, suddenly mortified, rushed to his side. "Going to the witch woman is madness, to say nothing of the Imperial Order troops all along the way back up through the New World. You can't do this." "I have to. I think that Shota may be able to help me find Kaylin."
"Richard, she's a witch woman."
Nikki was beside herself. "She's not going to help you." "She's helped me before. She gave Kaylin and me a wedding gift. I think she may remember it." "A wedding gift?" Kara asked. "Are you crazy? Shota would just as soon kill you as not." There was more truth in that than Kara knew. His relation with Shota had always been an uneasy one. Nikki put a hand on his leg.
"What wedding gift? What are you talking about?"
"Shota wanted Kaylin to die because she feared that together we would conceive what Shota believed would be a monster child, a gifted confessor. At our wedding, as a truce, she gave Kaylin a necklace with a small dark stone. It's magic of some sort that prevents Kaylin from getting pregnant. Kaylin and I decided that for the time being, with all that's going on and all that we have to worry about, we would accept Shota's truce." There had been a time when the chimes had been loosed, that magic of every sort had failed. For a while, they hadn't known about the chimes, and that the necklace's magic had failed. It was then that Kaylin had conceived a child. The men who beat her that terrible night had ended that. It was also possible that because of that brief failure of magic, the nature of the world had undergone a fundamental, irrevocable change that would eventually lead to the end of all magic. Kaylin certainly believed that it was happening. There had been a number of strange events that were otherwise inexplicable. Zed had once called it the cascade effect. He said that once begun, such a thing could not be stopped. Richard didn't know if it was true that magic was failing or not. "Shota will remember the necklace she gave Kaylin. She will remember her magic, just as you will remember yours, so that you will be able to find me. If anyone will remember Kaylin, Shota will. I've had my disagreements with the witch woman, but in the past I've also inadvertently helped her as well. She owes me. She will help me. She has to." Nikki threw her hands up.
"Of course such a thing has to be a necklace that Kaylin would wear, not something that you would have. Don't you see what you're doing? Once again, your mind has invented something that conveniently can't be proven. Everything you come up with is somewhere else, or something we can't see. This necklace is just more of your dream. Nikki pressed a hand to her forehead. Richard, this witch woman is not going to remember Kaylin because she doesn't exist.
Shota can help me. I know she can. I know she will. I can't think of any better opportunity to get answers. Time is slipping away. The longer Kaylin is with whoever has her, the greater the danger to her life and the less my chance of helping get her back. I have to go to Shota.
And what if you're wrong? Nikki demanded. What if this witch woman refuses to help you?
I will do whatever it takes to make her help me.
Richard, please put this off for at least a day or two. We can talk it through. Let me help you properly consider your options.
Richard pulled the reins around, letting his horse and the one tethered to it start toward the door.
Going to Shota is my best chance of getting answers. I'm going.
Richard ducked under the big doorway as they rode out into the night. Out across the expanse of grounds, the cicadas droned on. He pulled his horse around to see Nikki standing in the doorway, lit from behind by the lantern light.
You be careful, he told her. If not for yourself, then for me.
That, at least, made her smile. She shook her head in resignation.
By your command, Lord Rawl.
He waved his farewell to Victor and Ishak.
Safe journey!
Ishak said as he removed his hat.
Victor saluted with a fist over his heart. Come back to us when you can, Richard.
Richard promised them he would. As they started down the road, Kara shook her head.
I don't know why you bothered going to all the trouble to save my life. We're going to die, you know.
I thought you were coming with me to prevent that from happening.
Lord Rawl, I don't know if I can protect you against a witch woman. I've never faced their power. Nor have I heard of any Mord Sith who has. A confessor's power used to be deadly to Mord Sith. It could be that witch woman's power is just as fatal. I will do my best, but I just think you should know that I might not be able to protect you from a witch woman.
Oh, I'd not worry about it, Kara, Richard said as he squeezed his legs and shifted his weight, urging his horse into a canter. If I know Shota, she won't let you get anywhere near her anyway.
Chapter 25. As she marched down the side of a wide thoroughfare leading a small knot of men, Nikki thought that, in a way, it seemed like the sun had gone out since Richard had left. She missed just being able to look into his eyes, at the spark of life in them. For 2 days she had tirelessly gone about the urgent preparations for the imminent attack, but without Richard around, life seemed empty, less bright, less of everything. At the same time, when he had been around, his single-minded determination to find his imagined love had been draining. In fact, she had sometimes wanted to strangle him. She had tried everything from patience to anger in an attempt to get him to come around to seeing the truth, but it had been like trying to push against a mountain. In the end, nothing she'd done or said had made any difference. For his own sake, she earnestly wanted to help him to come to grips with reality. To do so, she had to challenge him in an effort to try to get him to come to his senses before something terrible happened. But at the same time, trying to make him see the truth somehow always seemed to cast her as a villain working against him. She hated being in that position. Nikki hoped that by the time she finished helping to rid Alterang of the threat of the approaching Imperial Order troops and their wizard Kronos, she could quickly catch up with Richard and Kara. With spare horses and as fast as she knew he would ride, Nikki realized that she would not be able to catch up with him until after he reached the witch woman. If he even made it that far. If Shota didn't kill him once he did. From what Nikki knew of witches, Richard's chances of coming out of her lair alive were pretty slim. He would have to face the witch woman without Nikki's help and protection. Still, he knew the woman. And she was a woman in every sense from what Nikki had heard of her, so maybe Richard would at least be civil. It was not at all wise to be impolite to witches. But even surviving an encounter with a witch woman, he would still be devastated if she didn't help him, and Nikki knew she couldn't because there was no missing woman for Richard to find.
At times it infuriated her that he was so obstinate about something so obviously nothing more than an illusion. At other times she worried that he really was losing his mind. That was too chilling a thought to contemplate. Nikki paused at the side of the road with a sudden, terrible realization. The men following her had lurched to a halt when she did, bringing her out of her thoughts. They were all with her, either to see to her instructions in regard to some of the defenses of the city, or else to carry messages as needed. Now they stood silent and uneasy, not knowing why she had stopped. "Up there," she said to the men, pointing at a 3-story brick building on the corner across the street. "Make sure that we can use that place to good advantage and put at least a couple dozen archers in the windows. See that they have a good supply of arrows."
"I will go take a look," one of the men said before running off across the road, dodging wagons, horses, and hand-drawn carts. People rushed along the side of the street, passing around Nikki and the men with her, as if they were a rock in a swiftly moving river. Passers-by spoke in hushed tones among themselves as they coursed between clusters of hawkers calling out trying to sell their goods, or people gathered to urgently discuss the impending battle for the city and what they would do to protect themselves. Wagons of every sort, from big freight wagons pulled by teams of 6 horses to small wagons pulled by a single horse, sped past in a hurry to complete the stockpiling of provisions or other necessary work while they still could. Despite the din of horses, wagons, and people, Nikki didn't really hear any of it. She was thinking about the witch woman. Nikki had suddenly realized that Shota might not simply be unwilling to help Richard, but she might not tell him so. Witch women had their own way of doing things, and their own ends. If this woman thought Richard was being too insistent or assertive, she very well might decide to get rid of him by sending him on a useless quest to the ends of the world. She very well might do such a thing simply to amuse herself, or to doom him to die a slow death on an endless march across some distant desert. A witch woman might do such a thing just because she could. Richard, in his urgency to find his fantasy woman, wouldn't consider those possibilities. He would promptly head off to where she pointed. Nikki was furious with herself for letting him leave to go to such a dangerous woman. But what could she do? She couldn't very well forbid him from going. Her only chance was to get rid of Brother Kronos and his troops as swiftly as possible and then go after Richard and do what she could to protect him. She spotted the man she had sent to check the brick building, sidestepping his way between the wagons and horses as he ran back across the road. Nikki noticed that even with all the people out traveling the roads of the city, it was still much less busy than an ordinary day. People everywhere were making preparations. Some had already holed up in places where they thought they might be safe. Nikki had been with the order when they swept into a city. There was no safe place. The man dodged his way around an empty wagon bouncing past and at last reached Nikki's side. He stood silently waiting. He was afraid to speak until she requested his report. He was afraid of her. Everyone was afraid of her. She wasn't just a sorceress. She was a sorceress in a bad mood, and they all knew it. No one understood why she seemed so ill-tempered, but for 2 days everyone had walked on eggshells when they were around her. It had nothing to do with them, and not even anything to do with Richard racing off on his mad search for a woman who didn't exist. But none of them knew that. Nikki was mentally immersed in preparing herself for the ferocity of the violence to come, rehearsing in her mind the various things she might need to do, and hardening herself to it all.
This is the end of disc number 8. Please insert disc number 9.